With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There is no better group of ones for flower power and forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. Today, I'm joined by a titan of the horticultural industry, the man who set up Miracle-Gro in Europe and is now the chairman of the great Green Fingers charity, creating gardens for children in hospices. It's John Ashley. My thanks to Westland Horticulture, sponsors of this podcast, and to my producer, Charlie Jones. One of the broadsheet newspapers last Saturday interviewed Matt Appleby. He's got a new book coming out on vegan gardening. Oh, and in it, he describes me as a veteran gardener. Now, I'm not sure about that. I mean, veterans in my mind are people who have done things in the past. And if last week was any guide, I think it'd be fair to say I'm still pretty active, both gardening and in the horticultural world. I must get Matt on again. I'm not sure about this vegan gardening. I mean, he won't harm any animal of any kind, you know, so he lets the slugs and snails do their worst, apparently, puts a few leaves down and hopes to collect some, but won't dig because he's afraid of harming the worms. Makes me wonder when I'm digging and my friendly robin comes to pick up spiders and centipedes, should I frighten the robin away? And then, of course, he won't use any manures with animal connections. Fish, blood and bone, apparently, are off the record. I mean, I don't know what he does when he goes to the lavatory. I mean, that's animal manure, isn't it? What's he expect to happen to that? We must get him on and have a bit of a debate about veganism in gardening. I mean, I can understand people not wanting to harm animals, and I can understand people not wanting to eat meat, but where do you draw the line on all of these things? Steve and Val Bradley and I are just back from the IPM at Essen, and goodness, there was so much to see. 1,600 exhibitors from 50 countries. How about strawberries? I met a breeder who has a new kind of strawberry that you sow in July. Yes, you sow it. You don't plant runners. You actually raise it from seed. And then it crops from November right round to March, April. It's under glass, of course, with LED lighting and some radiant heat. But I can tell you, they were the sweetest and the best flavoured strawberries I've ever tasted. They're already being grown commercially in Holland, and the chefs are sort of queuing up for them. I'm just wondering whether it would be possible with these modern small LED light propagating units that you can have in the home, whether we'd be able to grow this strawberry, it's called Delissimo, on the sort of windowsill. I'll be chasing that up. And if I get satisfactory results, well, then obviously we'll be reporting it here. I am slowly digesting everything that I heard and saw at the Garden Centre Association conference at Luton, who last week, goodness, garden centres have changed. You know, we had the first ones in, what, 1959, 60, 61, I suppose, where it was nothing more than selling plants in pots from sheds in a number of cases. They are so sophisticated now, really huge, one-stop shopping places. I've seen headlines which said that the modern garden centre now competes with the high street stores, and those that have huge restaurants and clothing franchises and barbecues, kitchen special sections and farm shops. I mean, it's just unending. We saw pictures from the Barton Grange Garden Centre up near Preston, where their flower bowl actually has curling, 10-pin bowling, a cinema, and crazy golf, alongside what is one of our finest garden centres in the country, I think. I mean, you'd need a day there, I'm sure. And the restaurant is such that you probably want to go to sleep after you've had a really good meal there. It really is an amazing world. We had speakers too on what was going to happen to the retail world in the next few years, and quite honestly, it frightened the life out of me. Could you imagine standing in a bus shelter on your way home and looking to see a whole lot of ready meals in pictures on the wall of the bus shelter, and you point your phone at it, because most people apparently don't decide what they're going to eat that evening until they're on their way home, and you put your mobile phone at whatever of these recipes catches your eye or your taste buds at a particular moment, and by the time you come home, it's delivered on the doorstep. Money deducted, of course, by mobile phone from your account. And so you don't do anything at all except just decide, and then somebody else worries about everything else. I mean, it just, well, stopped me in my tracks and a lot more. And the things that companies like Amazon are doing, you know, with their pop-up shops. And they say that a lot of clothes retailers won't have clothes anymore. You'll just have a personal stylist. So, you go in and they sit you down and get you a nice cup of tea, and the stylist comes and chats to you, and then they measure you up. And they know, of course, from what you've bought in the past, what your tastes are and what programs you watch on TV and fashions you're likely to be interested in. And so then up on screen comes the sort of clothes they think that you might like, and you make your choice. And again, they're delivered home without you having to carry a bag. Goodness. Times are changing. I'm not sure that I can keep up. The real beauty to me at the Garden Centre Conference were the rising stars. They select about 20 young people who want to be trained on, and this year for the first time they had catering rising stars. And so they get these young people from a number of garden centres across the country, get them together, and they have workshops. They actually took them, I think, to London and visited 30 coffee shops at great speed just to show them what was happening in the catering front. And then the four finalists. There was Susie Jarrett from Tong. There was Ben Riding from Haskins. James from Fran Gogh Garden Centre, and Louise Spinks from Ruxley Manor Garden Centre in Kent. They were the four who just had 4 or 5 minutes to speak to the gathering on what they'd learnt and what they'd done to test the teaching and training they'd had. They were fantastic people, I'll tell you. And it's great to see what just a little bit of encouragement and training will do. I met Will from Barton Grange. He was a gardening rising star several years ago and came onto our stand at the Chelsea Flower Show and had a container that he'd planted. Boy, lovely young bloke. And now in charge, I think, of the plant area at that huge garden centre, Barton Grange. The other thing that interested me no end was that a number of our chains of garden centres are among the national award winners. Blue Diamond, Squires, the Klondike Strike Group up in the north, and Haskins, all, you know, sizeable garden centre chains, but competing really very well with the independents, who in the past have been the ones with the energy and the entrepreneurial spirit to get things moving. I mean, back into the home plot of a lovely little plot of Hobson's Choice Snowdrop. We went to Anglesey Abbey a number of years ago, my brother, my sister and I, and they had sort of one little snowdrop in a 9-centimetre pot. I don't know what I paid for it, probably £10 a pot, quite a lot of money, well, to me then. And we each took one home. And my pot is now 3 clumps, and I must have 150 flowers. And I was wearing one in my buttonhole to the office on Tuesday. And a chap, you know, said, oh, that's a nice flower. And I said, it's Hobson's Choice. He said, that's my wife's favourite film. So once this clump has finished flowering, I must get my trowel out and just pull a little bulb or two off, and his wife can have a clump of Hobson's Choice Snowdrop. Hopefully it'll grow as well as mine. One other word or two of advice. You know, freesia are very popular cut flowers. And in the early 1970s, they were a major crop in Guernsey. Seed was sown in April. The seedlings grown on in large whale hide pots outside to be housed under glass when tomatoes had finished. The cool sea air helped no end with the freesia growth through the summer, and I seem to remember they had tiles under each pot so that they didn't root through. If you break the root on freesia, it sort of checks the growth quite a bit. So I thought, well, I'd have a go. I sowed a few seeds last April to see how they would grow in my polytunnel. I'm afraid they only got as far as 11 centimetre pots, and then everything else I had to do last summer, they got neglected. But there they are, a few of them, still in the 11 centimetre pots and starting to throw up flower. I've taken one indoors just to make sure that I can have that fragrance from freesia. And so far, on the ground in the polytunnel, they've survived a frost down to -7. So I have my fingers crossed if they will actually go through the winter. Next year, I think I might grow quite a few just so I have some to cut.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Now, my interview guest this week, well, I don't know what we call him, one of the foundations of the industry, perhaps, John Ashley, I've known for very many years. And if you want to know about garden products and how to sell them, then John Ashley's your man. And now, in retirement, or perhaps I should say semi-retirement, he's the voice and the energy behind the charity Green Fingers. Now, John, you're at Luton Hoo at the Garden Centre Conference, I believe.
That's right, Peter.
Yeah, so you're in very distinguished circumstances.
Indeed, all the creme de la creme from the industry are here.
And I've taken you away from them for a few minutes. But, John, can we take you right back to your early days on the road as a salesperson? I was a bit upset yesterday when one of the speakers said that we didn't need salesmen anymore. I think we always need salesmen, don't we?
I think so. I think certainly in communicating with people and persuading people to grow their business with new products and new ideas is always a case. When I came out of the forces doing national service out in Malaya in 1958-60, I then joined the Quaker Oats Company as a trainee. And in those days, there weren't many supermarkets about, and all the big grocery firms had big sales forces, and they were going around doing 20 calls a day. And the first thing I remember by my sales trainer was to take me out and buy me a hat. And I always had to take your hat in. So you had a sample case and a hat, and you didn't know where to put the hat in the bacon slicer or goodness knows what. So I look back on those days with great amusement.
John, you had to raise your hat, though, didn't you?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. You had a formal greeting of the retailer.
Yeah. But you also handled cash in those days.
Oh, indeed. You collected accounts and you had to pay the money in the bank. And as you got to know the retailers, they used to say, right, here's the invoice. And they used to push across a tin. There's one particular retailer. He said, count it out. And I used to count the money out of the invoice. And I said, right, I've got it all. And then go along to the bank and pay it in.
But then, John, you were a tour de force with the brand Fison, weren't you?
Yes, I went to Manchester Business School. Professor Roland Smith was the big architect in those days, and I suppose it was the equivalent of Harvard. Quaker sent me on this thing, and they said, where is the disposable, where's business going? Where's disposable income? And they all sort of came up with all these things of because there weren't many eateries out there. I think little chefs were probably the most modern eating. There was no McDonald's or anything like that. And they pointed to the leisure industry, and in particular, gardening, as people would have more money to spend on leisure pursuits like gardening and doing up your bathrooms and kitchens, etc. And by then, I'd progressed through the ranks of Quaker. I was sort of into the national accounts. So I looked after half the country of national accounts. The Co-op was the biggest account in those days, amongst many others. And I saw this advert for Fison's, and they were recruiting. And I went along to see this chap, and it was the Fison's Agrochemical Division, and they were starting to form a new division in horticulture. And in those days, there weren't many garden centres, very few, in fact. The distribution of garden products went through nurseries and corn seed and pet shops. And that's how I joined the industry in 1972. Very, very different business today than it was then.
But you would have seen the launch of Levington and Compost and Things?
Indeed, the grow bag was the big one. That was the big breakthrough. Levington, we'd just brought over from the commercial side, but they were all big bags. They weren't sort of small bags. But when you see that what we were paying for a bag of compost in those days, it's probably the same amount of money as today.
I think it probably is, John, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So it's quite amazing, these prices.
But then you moved across, because there were two big brands. There was the ICI Plant Protection.
Correct.
And Fison's, and you really battled it out, didn't you, you two?
Oh, indeed. Well, they were the killers and we were the growers. I think that's how we used to phrase it. They had all the killing products, and we seemed to have Evergreen and Tom Wright, brands that have still survived and are there today, very strong brands still.
Yeah. But so why did you change? Because, I mean, you were the man who introduced what I think is one of the greatest characters of all in horticulture, Horace Hagedorn.
Well, it was through really a mutual friend from ICI, a chap called Peter Koenig, and he phoned me up and said, John, he said, there's an American chap I'd like you to meet, and he's thinking about launching a product in this country. So I went along and met Horace Hagedorn, who was then, he must have been 70 then, and he had created Miracle-Gro in the States in the 50s, and he was an advertising man through and through, and he met a chap called Otto Stern, who grew plants. He was an immigrant from Germany, and he went and was used to use, as all people did, advertising in papers, his roses and goodness knows what. And he came to Horace once, and he said, Horace, he said, I've got a problem. He said, because the postal system in America is such, by the time the plants get to the people, they're a bit tired and sometimes nearly dead. And can you help? So Horace said, funnily enough, he said, I read an article about Rutgers University in America. And they were a big research company and this, that, and the other. And he said, let's get in touch with them, see if they can help us make a product. And they went along and saw this chap. And he said, yes, he said, I can get you a formula. And so Miracle-Gro formula was born. And Horace came back home and he told his wife, Peggy. And they said, she said, well, this is, what are we going to call this product? So she said, well, it sounds a miracle product. And so Miracle-Gro was born. So that's the story of how Miracle-Gro came to the States.
Behind every man, there's a woman.
Absolutely, yes, indeed.
I didn't know that, John. I didn't realise that Peggy came up with the name. Yeah.
That's indeed she did. She was the... And unfortunately, Peggy died. I never met Peggy, but I did meet Horace, who was a great advertising man, actually advertised to say, I'm a lonely widower. And he met Amy, and I think you did meet Amy.
Oh, I did, yes.
His second wife, who was a lovely lady.
Yeah.
So anyway, the story of Horace in the UK. So we sat down and talked. He said, look, I want to launch my product in the UK, and I want a product champion, and I want to use ICI as our distributor, but I don't want to use any ICI people. I want somebody from outside. I want somebody who we employ in their sort of operation. And that's how it happened. So I was working within ICI for the Miracle-Gro company. So I was the first non-American to ever be employed by Horace. And in those days, Horace, the Miracle Grip business was relatively small. It wasn't doing $100 million turnover in the States then. So it still had a long way to come. And when you think that that business now, the Scots business and the Miracle-Gro business that emerged and they took over to control, is now a $3 billion business worldwide. It's quite an achievement.
But John, when you did the introduction of Miracle-Gro, it was really the time of organics, wasn't it? I mean, you came in at not a perfect time.
Oh, indeed.
But made unbelievable headway in a very short time.
And there were competition, of course. There was Bobby Manners Fostrogen,
yeah,
who was really the brand in the soluble fertiliser market. But the advertising that Horace did, and he created his own commercials using local people, and he identified very quickly that it's good to have regional accents. So we had to recruit gardeners who had used it in the early days, a Scotsman, a Yorkshireman, Irishman, or ladies, to make the commercials. And they came across very, very sincerely that they were good gardeners and they knew that this product worked for them. And so it just boomed, you know, it just went from strength to strength.
Amazing.
I think we broke even in year two. So that was spending £1 million on advertising every year. So that was quite a feat.
And quite a story, John. Yeah.
Indeed, quite a long journey, but yeah, very enjoyable. And meeting you in the early days, we've had many great events, and you've done great work in the Sun with all the articles and the competitions that we ran.
Well, Pots of Gold was fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We had some really beautiful gardens, pictures of gardens sent in on the Pots of Gold
competition. We certainly did.
Yeah. But then, John, you've done a pretty good hard-working life in the garden chemicals business, and then you went into Scottsdale Garden Centre and gave a bit of help there, didn't you?
That's right. Well, when I was sort of part retired, although I still worked for, when I stood down from being sales and marketing director of the, because we eventually took over ICI and Fison's, so, and then spread into Europe and took over Rongpolonk in the garden product side, as they were being shed by their parent companies. And we launched in Holland and France and Germany. So we built the European side fairly rapidly in the 90s. It was quite a busy time one way and another. So, it was quite a time.
But your relationship with Scottsdale would just have been as a non-executive director, or?
No. Yes, I went in there purely because when I lived in Cambridge and Scottsdale's were sort of my test bed. I used to try ideas out there, and they were very helpful. And met David Rayner, who was the owner, and his daughter Caroline, who was the MD. And I went in there and helped them do some marketing, and we eventually joined a big Tillington buying group. And so it was just getting into retail, which was again another very interesting side. So, but I've reached 80 this January, so I decided it was high time that I could let the jobs on.
Come on now, young lad like you know.
Well, we're not all like you, Pete, you know. However, I'm going to have a pacemaker fitted in February, so I'm hoping to catch up with you.
But John, I mean, you're now, you know, the voice and some of the energy of this wonderful charity, Green Fingers. You know, when you were showing a little film yesterday at the conference, I mean, it was a real tearjerker.
Yes, it is.
I mean, Green Fingers, just tell us a bit about it and you're doing.
Well, Green Fingers started by
Richard Jackson.
Richard Jackson.
Yep.
I was thinking of Peter Jackson from Scottsdale.
Yeah.
Richard Jackson, and he is QVC, but I used to work with him at Fison, so we go back a long way, 1972, and his wife Val, she was also at Fison. So it was very much a breeding ground, not only for marriages, but for talent that has come through over the years. And he started it, and the idea of, and got a few people together. And he asked me to join early on, but as I was so busy, I just couldn't devote any more time at that time to that. But I did join about 15 years ago as a trustee, and have been a trustee there. But we've built 55 gardens for children's hospices in 20 years, which is a tremendous feat. We do about three a year, and but as time's gone on, it's got more and more difficult because the needs of the children and the gardens are becoming more expensive. So the average cost of a garden could be anywhere for £100,000 because you need hard tracks for wheelchairs and beds, etc., for these children.
I mean, some of these really seriously ill children are actually wheeled out in their bed into the open air to
Indeed
hear the birds and run their fingers through water and things. I mean, it's
fantastic. The therapy of gardening for these children who can't speak in many ways, and they are all mostly, well, they are terminally ill, to see their reaction to feeling water, to feeling plants, to smelling them, to listening to birds, as you say, is quite magical. And it's quite a great thing to be part of that. I remember I was up in Stockton-on-Tees. We were opening an extension of a garden there, and I met this lady who was doing some gardening. I was walking around the garden, and I said to her, you must be a great help to them here, helping with the garden and this and that. She said, I come here every week, she said. My daughter died here, and I get great pleasure coming back to be with my daughter. Now, that is such a story that if that can't move you, you've got a heart of stone, I think.
And John, you have some really exciting news to take the charity into even greater public awareness at the Chelsea Flower Show this coming
Indeed,
May.
Indeed, we have. Yeah. We were very fortunate. We had a lovely lady who has run tea parties and goodness knows what and raised a lot of money for us. And she came to us and she said, I'd love to sponsor a garden at Chelsea Flower Show to try and lift your image if that would be any help. And so we were so pleased that she's quite anonymous, but lovely family. And so we will be there on Main Avenue, and we have a great design for this garden. And we're really looking forward to growing the brand, which is very much like I approach Green Fingers as I did with Miracle-Gro. You know, it's a brand, and we have to grow that brand and get it known by people, and the support from people as we grow will bring more funds in, hopefully, and we'll be able to design and build more gardens for children's hospices.
But John, I've seen an outline of what's planned. It's on two levels, and there's a lift, isn't there?
That's right.
I mean, lifts are going to become increasingly important in gardens for old people as well as for terminally ill young people, isn't it? Could be a very interesting design.
I think it will be. I'll be fascinated. And somebody said it's driven my water. I don't know. I've not seen it in action. I don't know whether it's actually built yet. But anyway, it'll be a fascinating thing. And you're very welcome to join us on the stand, Peter, when on press day and onwards.
John, thank you very much for joining us today and for all that you're doing for disabled children. You know, it's a fantastic charity, and all strength to your elbow. Great to speak to you.
Thank you, Peter, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Now, my thought for the week comes from the Garden Centre Conference, and it was a quote from a senior army officer. And he told us, the standard you walk past is the standard you accept. That's quite a statement, isn't it? You know, sometimes when we see things which we don't like, the dropping of litter comes immediately to mind. We just walk past and accept it. Takes a bit of spirit to not walk past. So I'll leave that thought with you. The standard you walk past is the standard you accept. My thanks to Westland Horticulture, sponsors of this podcast, and thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your garden. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.